Welcome to the Hitchhiker's Guide to IT, brought to you by Device 42. On this show, we explore the ins and outs of modern IT management and the infinite expanse of its universe. So buckle up and get ready to explore the ever-changing landscape of modern IT management.
Hello and welcome to the Hitchhiker's Guide to IT, where we explore the people and ideas shaping the future of technology. I'm your host, Michelle Dawn Mooney. Today, we're talking about something that sits at the heart of every digital transformation power. As AI and data workloads surge, the demand for resilient, sustainable energy has never been higher. Joining us today is Pete DeSanto, Executive Vice President of Engineering Solutions at Enchanted Rock. And Pete brings more than 25 years of experience in nuclear, fossil, and distributed power generation. And he is helping redefine how we think about energy resilience in the digital age. Pete, great to have you with me today.
Great to be here, Michelle.
Looking forward to getting into the conversation. Before we do that, however, can I have you give us a brief bio if you can, please?
Sure. Born and raised in Boston, Massachusetts. You'll hear the accent as we go through the conversation. Maritime grad, worked on oil tankers, but predominantly have been in the power infrastructure my whole career. From refueling nuclear subs for the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard and the government to working for a large blue chip company like Emerson and in and out of fossil plants, combined cycle plants. I've just been in the energy infrastructure. And now it's cool again to be, everybody's talking about power. So now all of a sudden to be in the power infrastructure and translating that into digital infrastructure is very exciting. We're at a very exciting point in North America and the United States for power generation. And I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, awesome. So I want to dig a little deeper. Can you tell us about your career and then how it led you to Enchanted Rock and the world of energy resilience?
Yeah. So I went to Massachusetts Maritime Academy. I wore a naval uniform for 4 years, worked steam plants, went out to sea, had a lot of experience hands-on, as well as in the engineering field in operating plants. And the first job I took out of school, like I mentioned, was it was so exciting. I want to be a nuclear engineer working for the government, refueling fast attack submarines. And it was a great experience. I went straight out of school, out of college, and did 6 months at Navy Nuke School, and went right back into the classroom and nuclear engineering. And that really, it was one of those, for me personally, it was a great role. Love what we were doing, security clearance, doing all that fun stuff for the government. But it wasn't as hands-on and as active for me. The Navy operated their own reactors. Union Craft Force did all the work, and it was more of a procedure person. So from there, I leveraged and had an opportunity to go work on oil tankers. And I was on the start of the energy infrastructure side with transporting bulk oil products from Texas to Florida back and forth. So picking up at refineries and dropping off in Florida. And then want to start a family. So 3 months on, 3 months off, working on an oil tanker is not really a conducive lifestyle if you want to be home every day. And I had an opportunity that's what brought me into Emerson Electric, and was working in and out, area manager, running a shop, doing maintenance on power plants during their outages, and then did a lot of travel there, and then leveraged that into a small startup company in Georgia. I moved from Boston to Georgia. No Georgia accent stuck with me. raised my kids a little bit in Georgia. They were born in Boston, raised in Georgia for a little bit, and then had an opportunity to come to Enchanted Rock in late 2019, early 2020, and basically growth company doing distributed energy, microgrids, behind the meter, natural gas recips, and really get to grow with that company. Operate the fleet through Winter Storm Uri, be over all of operations, the market dispatch, the resiliency for all of our customers, 390 microgrids across Texas, California, Louisiana, Mississippi, the weather prone areas, and then really get to be involved in digital infrastructure as how do we take, the first 150 megawatts that Enchanted Rock installed was 114 locations, grocery stores, that type of what you would call critical infrastructure. And then the last 150 megawatts was three sites. you can see the density and the increase of megawatts of the sites. And now working with hyperscalers and being able to deliver a solution that works with the grid, as well as provides resiliency when there's a grid interruption. So it's been a I've been a power guy for a long time.
Yeah. You have worked across some of the most mission critical industries in power. So what have you learned about managing technical complexity and maintaining reliability when failure simply isn't an option?
Great question. I believe it's the people. It's the people and the culture. Because the technology can change, but it's how you deploy it. It's how you train your people. It's how you give them a sense of urgency and a mission criticality of it. And they have to be bought into it because the technology can be pretty robust and almost bulletproof, so to speak. But if you're not eye on the ball, you're not watching it, you're not understanding what's going on in the periphery of with the market, with the utilities, with the grid, you can catch yourself flat-footed. And it really comes down to the people because somebody's sitting at that panel 24/7, someone's answering that alarm. And I always think that I believe that it's really the people aspect of it, how you train your people, how you motivate your people, how you grow the people around it that are doing the work, that are maintaining the equipment. All forms of power generation, they need maintenance, and it's at a specific interval, and they need inspections, and they need care, custody, and control of that gear. And if you're not paying attention, it's going to let you down when you need it most. So that's kind of what I've learned is, if you take care of the people and have strong procedural kind of curriculum that you put them through and you invest in them, you, regardless of what form of power generation, you're going to probably be pretty successful.
Yeah, great perspective. For listeners who may not be familiar, can you explain what Enchanted Rock does and what makes your approach to resilience and distributed energy unique?
So we use a small node size. It's a 500 kW natural gas gen set. And we string them together in clusters, but we typically say in front of the meter, behind the meter. So if you have a grocery store, you have a data center, there's an incoming utility meter, and the generation is behind the meter on the campus of the data center. And what that means is it's very modular, meaning, Michelle, we could train you in a couple weeks, a month to maintain the equipment. Maybe not take it apart and put it back together again. But from making rounds and doing preventative maintenance or PMs on it, it's very easy. It's the same iteration over and over again. So the clusters of gens, of generation on site is very easy to operate, very easy to maintain, but it's distributed in what they call an N+1 configuration. So if you need 100 megawatts, we'd install more than 100 megawatts so that you can take some of the equipment down, work on it, bring it back up. Meanwhile, you can still cover the load. So it's a automated system that if the utility power went away, the generation automatically comes up, automatically maintains the load at the data center seamlessly, and then transitions back when the utility power comes back and seamlessly puts it back on the utility power.
There's so much evolution involved with what we're talking about here. As digital transformation accelerates, IT, operational technology are converging now more than ever. So how do you see the role of IT evolving within energy and infrastructure operations?
I see it evolve. This is going to be a convergence, right? I mean, for the last, call it 2.5-3 years, if you pick up a newspaper, you read anything digital content online, it's talking about power. It's talking about a lack of power. Like we've consumed all the available power. And I would tell you that from a firm basis, we have some constraints, meaning I want power 24/7, 365 from the utility on a firm basis. And that's where there's interconnection queues of, I want to connect 100 megawatt data center. I want to connect a gigawatt data center. You're in the queue waiting for that firm power from the utility. And it may be 5, 6, 7 years before you can get the firm power from the grid. And I think there's an opportunity that if you say, hey, how much can you give me now and on what basis is what interruptible basis? So I can provide you the gigawatt for and you know, build a substation, which takes a certain amount of time. But at the end of the substation build out, I can give you a gigawatt, but I can only give it to you for 8,000 hours a year, not the 8760, which is 24/7 by 365. So if you say, hey, I get an interruptible contract and I have flexible interconnection, but you're going to bring your own generation anyways for backup power, So what if you flex that back to the grid and you had a flexible interconnection, and now all of a sudden you can put as much wind, solar, and battery on the grid as you would like. But now when you need firm power during a Uri or a winter event where, you know, capacity is constrained on the grid, now you can flex that back. And now all of a sudden the data center has gone from a grid liability because it's consuming, but now it can be a grid asset where it's producing the power, pushing it back to the grid in times of constraint. So I see this evolution, and it's an amazing time we have right now, because when you have that scarcity of available grid power, digital infrastructure is not going to be slowed down. It's going to continue to grow, and they're going to be creative, and they're going to innovate. And then you get supply chain, what the different modes of generation are, and you're going to find a lot more infrastructure diversity and interaction with utilities. The utilities are going to be the center of it, between, you know, data center utility and grid operator are now going to be working together versus thinking they compete with each other.
You've talked about transforming technical challenges into actionable items. So can you give us a specific example, maybe, where your team faced a major challenge and then turned it into an opportunity for innovation or improvement?
From a resiliency point of view in innovation, I mean, I go back to Winter Storm Uri as being one of the key events that comes to mind, with the 5 to 6 days of freeze in Texas. And, you know, and Shannon Rock has a merchant fleet. We don't, you know, diesel merchant fleet for an asset owner, but also hundreds of megawatts of natural gas distributed across 300 to 400 sites. And again, the example of innovation in the face of diversity would be when you have a merchant plant and it's, you know, 15 diesel engines on site makes up one of your locations. If three came down for whatever reason, and you had technicians on site, the roads are icy, you don't have all the parts you need, how do you turn three engines that are out of service into one engine that's running, because you need to continue to energize and push the power to the grid for the community? That type of innovation of getting scrappy, but also what I would say is we spent so much time, we learned so much during Uri as an organization, and we spent the time in the middle of it. We probably brought, a lot of us slept in the office during that time frame, from the control room and the network operations center. And we probably had 6 or 7 white, you know, dry erase boards that we had set up around the office. And every time we'd learn something, and we didn't want to forget it, we filled in all the dry erase boards, and then we did a post-mortem or after action after Uri, and everything was safe, and all of our customers were energized and maintained, and our technicians were back, and we took a breath. But then we went through every single thing we learned and put plans and actions around them to institutionalize that learning that we had, so we didn't learn it a second time, right? That's the frustrating thing, is when you learn something and you don't redeploy it, or you don't put it into your how you operate, and then you learn that lesson a second time, it's usually more painful the second time around. So we really leaned into everything that we learned, from having spare keys at site and certain things like that, of, you know, having emergency kits if the roads get icy, and just taking that and using it as a superpower.
Speaking of not wanting to have to learn something twice, I want to talk about the future. And, you know, it's really important, I'm sure you would agree, to be proactive rather than reactive. I mean, you're always going to have to react to something, but as proactive as you can be and prepared, the better. So as AI workloads accelerate, what is the biggest shift data center leaders need to make in how they think about energy and resilience?
I say training. I mean, a lot of what I see right now from a resilience point of view is the current state right now for most of the data centers that are on the grid is they operate and test and exercise their backup, you know, their backup gear, their backup generation 30 minutes a month. And that's probably not enough. I mean, this concept of the more you operate it, the more you use it within your air permits and environmentally, but the more you use it, the more you exercise it, the better it's going to run when you need it in a critical time frame, right? And so I think there's need, again, and meanwhile, the grid needs power. When you think about all the different components here, of almost every single data center has You know, if it's a 10 megawatt data center, it has 10 plus megawatts of generation on site. So now you think a gigawatt campus, it has over a gigawatt of generation on site and unlock. And meanwhile, the grid says, I don't have enough power, and there's potential for NERC and FERC have put out reports saying there's resource adequacy report that says we probably don't have enough power by the time we get to 2030 and we can't build enough power. And you, when you think about the AI race and all that stuff, now all of a sudden you're saying, look, all these data centers have their own generation on site. The grid is shorthanded with can't build plants fast enough for firm power for the load growth. You would think that there's a little bit of let's work together there. And that's what's starting to happen right now. And I think that, but again, from a resiliency point of view, the more you use it, the better it's going to run, the more maintained it's going to be. I always use the analogy of you have a classic car in your garage. You don't drive it very often. The weather's really nice for that convertible in Houston right now, that classic car. And if I want to take it out of the garage, the fuel's probably gone bad. The tires have probably dry rotted. I'm not taking it out. I got to do a whole lot of stuff to make it work. But if I drove it every day, tires are probably going to be good. The oil's going to be changed, fresh fuel in there, and it's going to drive a lot better. And I know what it needs and how it drives because I've used it all the time. So it's using that generation on site is more of a daily driver within reason. And it's going to be good for the grid, good for the utility, good for the community as well.
With that in mind, what are some of the most promising innovations or maybe approaches you see on the horizon for improving energy efficiency and reliability in large-scale IT environments?
We're going to see right now, it's power, it's speed. It's speed to power, speed to energization, it's speed to the grid, speed to interconnection. And once that kind of slows down a little bit, there's going to be a little bit more innovation, more efficiency gain. So right now it's a supply chain challenge of what can I get and how fast. And you can put some stuff on order, but 3 to 4 years of supply chain waiting for the gear, you got to do something. If your role is to build space to put a tenant in and you can't build that space or energize that space, that's not a great business model. So there's a lot of scrappiness on getting the power and getting it set up. But on the cooling, there's a lot more cooling, closed loop, there's water. I mean, when you think about the utility aspect of it, fuel efficiency on that side, fuel diversity on that side, battery infrastructure and increasing on the batteries and supercapacitors, that technology piece for efficiency is starting to catch up. And the same thing, I mean, data centers are very concerned, the industry is very concerned on the community and how they consume water, closed loop cooling, and air permitting and emissions are starting, you know, from an ESG point of view, is starting to, you know, rise to the top. So I think there's a lot more that's going to happen around conservation of the utilities on site. There's still going to be a gigawatt campus, but how do I reduce the amount of cooling that I need? How do I use smartly water consumption and, you know, parlay and push that out and not have to use it? The same as when I'm self-generating, what's the air permits? How do I use other technologies that are probably greener to get to where I need to?
So, Pete, for listeners who would like to learn more, what's one key takeaway they should remember from today's discussion?
They should remember that data centers care about the community and they're looking for ways to support them.
So, Pete, what should IT and data center leaders be paying attention to right now that maybe isn't getting enough attention in energy conservation?
They should be speaking with the local utilities and understanding what pains that the local utilities are having and having a more open conversation with them to coordinate the resources between the two entities.
Where can people go to learn more about the work Enchanted Rock is doing to support energy resilience?
They can go to our website, enchantedrock.com, or follow us on LinkedIn.
As we're wrapping up here, when you think about the future of resilience, whether it's technology, energy, or even leadership, what gives you the most optimism there?
You know, I've worked in a few different industries. Mostly it's been power, right? But there's a sense of community. I mean, they're all different, you know, entities from the colos, from multi-tenant colos, from the equipment manufacturers. But there's a strong sense of community in the data center vertical. And don't get me wrong, they're competing companies, but they definitely benchmark and look at each other and say, how do I see, you know, do what they're doing? And that gives that gives me a lot of optimism that as a community, as a digital infrastructure, you're going to have, like I said, the individual companies with the individual goals, but they're definitely benchmarking across. And there's when you go to a lot of the shows and you go to a lot of the technology conferences, there's a level of openness and sharing that you don't see anywhere else. And you know, oil companies don't necessarily do that. Other infrastructure companies don't necessarily share as a community the way that the digital infrastructure community does. And that gives me great more. That actually is, I think, pretty unique to the space.
And if people out there listening or wondering about what you're talking about, have more questions and want to learn more, where can they go?
They can go to LinkedIn, Pete DeSanto on LinkedIn, and send me a direct message and I get back to you as soon as I can.
Fantastic. Pete DeSanto with Enchanted Rocks, thank you so much for being with us and enjoyed this time with you and exciting times, as you said, to be in this industry and looking forward to the future and seeing what happens next. So appreciate your insight here.
Sounds good. Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
And I want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. If you enjoyed this conversation, be sure to subscribe and check out past episodes where we explore how technology leaders are navigating the ever-changing IT landscape. Until next time, I'm your host, Michelle Dawn Mooney. Stay curious, stay resilient, keep exploring, and we hope to connect with you on another podcast soon.